All right, welcome to Mysterious Streams, your number one podcast for everything strange, bizarre, and unusual found on movie streaming services. I'm your host, Nicholas Peterson, also known as the Mime Killer.
I am Mary Peterson, also known as the Nerdy Senorita.
Well, it's the Geeky Senorita.
Well, whatever. Nerd Geek Senorita.
Last week it was the Sexy Senorita.
Maybe I don't like my name, and maybe I want to change it.
You know, names are there for a reason.
Anyway.
This week we're kicking off Summer of Horror. Is it officially summer yet?
Not for another week, I think. I think the 27th is.
All right, so we're starting early, but we're starting the Summer of Horror. Not the Summer of Horrors, as someone thought I said last week.
Did somebody say that?
Yeah, someone thought I said the Summer of Horrors.
Maybe you need to learn to enunciate better.
Horrors.
Now you just sound like a Bugs Bunny cartoon.
Man, okay, so we're kicking off the Summer of Horrors. 12 selected films on Netflix celebrating horror from the 70s to...
present day,
yeah, right? 2011, I think, is when the newest film is. So, we're starting things off with the 1970 film Crucible of Horror.
Or otherwise known as A Corpse.
It's a British horror movie, kind of in tradition of Hammer films, if you've seen a Hammer.
I've never seen a Hammer film.
Hammer film is just a British horror company. You saw, actually, A Woman in the Dark, or The Dark Woman.
Woman in Black.
Woman in Black. That was a recent Hammer horror film.
Oh, okay. I get it. I feel you.
So if you've seen a Hammer horror film, you kind of know the vibe of these. Like, very British, usually dealing with upper crust people, very indubitably.
Quite.
Yes. Usually they have a slow burn, and usually very psychological.
This one didn't really feel like a very slow burn, though.
Really?
Not to me. Maybe it's just, I don't know. It felt like it set up the premise of it. It got right into the climax of it, and then afterwards it was just kind of like more, oh, this is what happened after the
fact. Well, before we talk about Crucible of Horror, let's just take a couple minutes and talk about Man of Steel.
Oh, Superman.
We also saw Man of Steel over the weekend, and the movie broke all June box office records for an opening film.
I was pretty impressed by that, I'm not going to lie.
So a lot of people saw it as well, but my quick thoughts, I thought it was good. I didn't think it was great. I thought it was definitely a good movie. It played it very safe. It kind of just went down the checklist about what you need in a Superman movie. You need Krypton, you need Smallville, you need heroics.
Is the town actually called Smallville that he landed in?
Yeah, that's Smallville.
Oh, is it? Oh, yeah. I don't care about Superman, so I don't know.
Superman grows up in Smallville, Kansas. The state's real, but the town is made up.
And, do you think that it was better than the last Superman movie?
Now, see, a lot of people that talking about the Brandon Roth movie, Superman Returns, a lot of people have like turned on that movie and think it's horrible. I always kind of liked it. I didn't think it was great either, but I didn't hate it, and I kind of dug it. It was really annoying to me that Bryan Singer was so obsessed with the Donner films that he gave Lex Luthor the same motivation that he had in the original films, which was always real estate schemes. Like, Lex Luthor is always trying to, like, blow up half the country so he can own a bunch of beachfront property.
Doesn't make sense to me.
It's a pretty cheesy premise, and it was cheesy in the 70s, and so to bring it back up,
wow,
and like,
that's pretty cheesy. If even in the 70s they're like, nope, that's just too much for us.
Well, to use it again in 2006 or whenever that movie came out, I just couldn't believe that Lex Luthor was still fixated on blowing up half the country and buying new real estate to resell.
Now, I don't know how you felt about it, but I kind of like that they didn't immediately have Lex Luthor as the first villain.
Yeah, Lex Luthor is not in, now back on Man of Steel, Lex Luthor wasn't in this. There was a very brief Easter egg where you saw a car labeled
LexCorp, which was kind of cool.
Other than that...
I liked that they didn't have that, because I feel like Lex Luthor, for me, I'm not a very big Superman fan, I actually really hate him. But
oh, you don't hate Superman.
I legitimately do.
No, you do not.
Maybe hate is a strong word, but yes, I legitimately don't like Superman.
You cried 5 times during this movie.
Yes, because I'm a human being and I'm touched by human emotions.
I don't.
Anyway, I like that Lex Luthor wasn't in this movie because I feel like he's too... Everybody knows Lex Luthor. And I think that it's nice to be able to do different kinds of villains from other storylines or story arcs or whatever, however you want to say it.
Well, yeah, this one had Zod, which we haven't
seen. I had never heard of Zod. I'll be honest. I've never heard of him.
So Zod was the cool. Big movie villain in Superman 2. The whole famous, have you ever heard Neil before Zod? That was the big.
No. This is the first, I guess, live action Superman movie I've ever seen. I'd never seen any of the other ones. I've been aware of them, and I know, like, Superman Returns, it's like this huge joke, you know, in pop culture. So but I've never seen it, so.
But yeah, so I kind of like Superman Returns. I think I did like Man of Steel more. But it certainly, to me, didn't feel like a great movie. It just was okay. And sometimes,
what would you have done to make it a great movie?
Well, maybe I would have spent a little bit more time on Krypton. They do a lot of really cool science fiction stuff with Krypton, and that's something that's very different from the other Superman films. They've kind of ignored or very downplayed the sci-fi elements of Superman. And Superman's a very science fiction-heavy superhero. If you read the comics, he's always fighting aliens. He's always kind of doing stuff in space. And that wasn't a huge part of the Donner films. And I did like that not only did Krypton seem really cool, like the way it looked, but they went into the backstory of Krypton.
And how it got destroyed. I don't know if they mentioned that in any of the comics or anything.
They've gone into it. Not this explanation, which was just a take on conservation and Krypton harvesting their energy core.
Do you think that was a deliberate thing?
Yeah, just a little environmentalist message in the movie. But, no, I really enjoyed that, science fiction stuff. Like I said, it's not a movie that I can pinpoint anything that I didn't like specifically, although the last half hour, just kind of the action sequences kind of ran together. Just very loud and very booming. And
I think you had mentioned after we watched it that you kind of wish that they had shown more of a physical consequence when he was fighting Zod. Like his hair got messed up, or maybe he got like a cut on his cheek or something.
Yeah, Superman doesn't even get his hair messed up in this fist fight. Spoilers, there's an action sequence at the end where Superman fights. And I wish they would
have shown. I don't really consider that a spoiler, considering it's Superman. You know at some point he's going to fight.
Well, hey, no, it's famously Superman Returns. Never threw a punch in the entire movie.
So again, I've never seen Superman Returns.
Well, there you go. But overall, I thought it was okay. Didn't make me completely. I remember after I saw Batman Begins and just thinking, oh man, this franchise, I can't wait till they go next. There's
another reason why Batman is far superior.
Well,
I will say this. I am very much more of a Batman fan than I am a Superman fan. And because of that and the way that my brain works, the entire time I was watching Man of Steel, I was like, oh man, see, this is why he needs a Batman in his life.
Well, Superman and Batman do play off each other fairly well, and I've always said that instead of DC and Warner Brothers trying to just copy the Avengers, they should just do a really good Superman-Batman movie.
I agree that I think that would be a little bit more.
It would be easier.
Yeah, it would be a lot of. Yeah, that's exactly what I was
just
trying to go
with. It would just be an easier film.
Very much so. Because, I mean, at this point, Marvel's already had their huge success with the Avengers, and it's like DC, I feel, really has a lot more groundwork, if they're even going to think about a Justice League movie. Because, I mean, you've got to do a movie like the Avengers did for each of the different founding members of the Justice League, I feel.
Yeah, or do something. You just got to do something, and it's smarter men than I will figure that out. But overall, I thought Superman was okay. I don't think we'll be really remembering this movie in a couple years like we did Batman Begins. Or the Christopher Nolan Batman movies.
Oh, those are amazing. I love them so much.
I think it's just going to be an okay movie. So that's that. So now let's move on to A Crucible of Horror.
Who, ironically enough, I would just like to say that the title, or not the title character, well, I guess, would he be the title character?
Let's set it up first. Crucible of Horror is about the Eastwood family. The Eastwood family is kind of an upper crust a British family living in a mansion and well-to-do. And the patriarch of the family, Mr. Eastwood, is
played by Michael Go, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, G-O-U-H-G-H, who ironically played Alfred to George Clooney's Batman.
So there's our... I thought
that was pretty awesome.
So there's our mild connection with the DC Universe. And he plays the
patriarch. He plays
the daddy. He's a banker, and he is.
Is he a banker? I thought he was like an insurance guy.
No, he's a banker.
Is it? Well, sorry. I thought, I don't know why, but I thought
he's pretty much a more evil version, a more evil version of the dad from Mary Poppins.
Yeah, if the dad of Mary Poppins was cruel and sadistic.
So he's a dick, but I don't entirely blame him. His daughter is a little bit of a hooter. And she's kind of...
Although I feel, again, you kept saying this during this movie, but again, I think that certain kids act like that. They act out in any way that they can as a kind of rebellion against this very... He's very, very strict. He has a very, very iron grip on his family, which I believe in to an extent. But when it gets to the point where your kids are trying to push out of that box in the most extreme amount of, or the most extreme measures or extreme ways... You gotta rethink your parenting skills, pal. Especially at 16.
Ironic, because the father ends up in a box by the end of the movie. we'll get to that in a couple of minutes. Let's just set up the rest of the family. So
then there's his daughter Jane, 16-year-old girl, very
cooler.
Whatever. His son, who is basically a carbon copy of his dad.
Yeah, his son is a little bit of a... He kind of has a little bit of a sociopath vibe.
Yeah, a little bit, because it's just nothing there.
Yeah, nothing. He kind of ignores any of the family drama and just kind of sticks his nose in the
newspaper. Although, very once in a while, he'll have, like, when I'm just going to call him Alfred. I don't care what his name is in the movie. When Alfred is, like, disciplining or being a dick to his daughter, to Jane, every once in a while, you'll see just, like, this little smirk on the guy's face.
Hmm.
Just like, I'm enjoying this.
Well, and then his wife,
Edith,
is, she's a little cray cray. She just kind of spends most of her time in the attic painting, kind of like really kind of surreal, disturbing paintings. She doesn't really eat. She doesn't really go out. There's no indication that she has any kind of...
The only thing that her life revolves around is her damn son getting that canvas for her. Like, that's it. The entire first half of the movie is, like, the son's name is Rupert. It's like, Rupert, did you get the canvas for me today? Can you get the canvas for me today? I really need the canvas.
So that's the family that this guy has to deal with. So one of his partners, or not one of his partners, one of his acquaintances that's at a club.
Wasn't it a co-worker, or was it an acquaintance?
No, because he's from a club. Like a,
oh, okay, yeah, like one of his acquaintances.
High society country club of some kind. Well, not only is his daughter...
Has a spectacular mustache.
He has a great mustache. Well, not only is his daughter banging the dude from the club...
Ooh, mustache rides.
Not only is she taking a mustache ride, she also stole money from the club, which is what brings the man she's having an affair with to their door.
Mm-hmm.
He actually tries to make out with the daughter.
In the hallway, while the family's having dinner.
And then she has the gall to criticize his mustache. His amazing mustache.
She had a spectacular thing. She said it was she referred to it as something, and for the life of me now, I'm not going to remember what it was. But if you watch this movie, you'll know what I'm talking about. And it was spectacular.
That's a good tease. So she insults his mustache. He decides, well, if I'm not going to get it on with this hooter, I suppose I will just...
She's not interested in another mustache ride.
She's only wanted one mustache ride.
You'd think maybe she went on the mustache ride so that she could, like, distract him enough so that she could steal the money.
Maybe. She obviously didn't care about him too much. Unless it was all, as you say, part of her rebellion of getting out of her
maybe
box.
Maybe it's like, this is how I'm going to get back at my dad. I'm going to totally sleep with one of his acquaintances.
So she runs back into dinner and tells Pops that...
she tells Alfred that, hey man, this dude totally, like, grabbed me in the hallway and put his face in my face, which is literally how she describes it, and I thought that was fantastic.
So Alfred storms out and confronts the man, and he just tells her she's lying, she just stole a bunch of money, and you know, I would
she
like...
knows that I know now, so now she's going to try to get you to be against me so you don't have any, so you don't lend any credence to what I'm saying.
Now, did you get a vibe that she actually, now that I think about it, do you think she actually stole the money, or do you think she made that up in order to cover up the affair?
Yeah, I think that might be a little bit more
plausible because just, I don't know, that's what I would do. Like, you sleep with me, I give you money for it just because I know how tight your dad holds the purse strings, because I think she even says a point how she's going to lose all of her friends because they're tired of paying for me all the time. So I think knowing that, he's like, look, I'll help you out if you do something for me. Bow-chicka-wow-wow. And then so when he comes back to kind of be like, well, because didn't he tell her, like, I didn't see you around today. I thought you were supposed to come by. And he didn't. So or she didn't. She just kind of blew him off. So he's like, oh, hell no, bitch. This is what I'm going to do now to get back at you.
Blew him off?
Yeah, she blew him off. Not literally, though.
Wow. No, that's fine. So I must have missed that scene where she blew him off, but it sounds erotic.
It was pretty hot. Not gonna lie.
So after the husband pays this man back the money, he goes back to have a discussion with his daughter, and then he teaches his hoor of a daughter a lesson by giving her a proper thrashing.
It was a little unsettling to see Alfred with a fucking... Was it a cane or was it a switch?
I think it was a switch.
Was it a switch? That's what
I thought. I thought it was a straight-up switch status.
That's what I thought, too. So I'm glad we're on the same page. So it was a little unsettling to see Alfred beat a young girl with the switch, but...
I wish he beat Alicia Silverstone with a switch in, Batman Forever?
Batman and Robin.
Oh, she was such a bitch in that movie.
I don't care what you say. I enjoyed Batman and Robin.
Batman and Robin, Alicia Silverstone shows up out of nowhere and starts bagging on him for being a butler. She's like, why you gotta be a butler? Why do you gotta be a manservant? Why do you own my dad? He's not a slave, he's a butler.
And he's very much...
And he looks like a butler.
He fucking basically raised Bruce Wayne, so of course he's gonna stay with him. He obviously has an emotional connection to this kid. He loves this kid. He's raised him. He's dressed his wounds. He's done everything for this kid. I don't really see him as a butler the way a butler is supposed to be, as this kind of like emotional distance between master and servant.
Anyway, yeah, I wish.
Sorry, that's a whole different podcast.
I wish he put a switch to Alicia Silverstone. That's my point. So after this switching, the mom and the daughter concoct a plan to kill poor Alfred just for trying to enforce some rule and discipline in his house.
Poor Alfred. My whole thing is, like, why don't you just take off while he's asleep? You're obviously adept at getting money, obviously. Why not just get money? Don't make it obvious that you're fucking... That was the thing in the movie. She hides the money in a wig that she's wearing. Why would you do that?
Why not?
Because obvious.
So she did steal the money.
She did, because at the beginning of the movie, she puts it in a wig when she's wearing that ridiculously horrid green gold outfit. She puts a wig on, and the dad at dinner even makes a comment about how reprehensible it is to him that she wears a wig.
I guess it was a kind of a convoluted plan. So the mom and daughter team up to murder him, and they do so by, while he's just trying to rock out to his violin music. And drink some scotch. They poison the scotch, and they hold him at gunpoint. And then while they hold him at gunpoint, he kind of has this flashback memory of an instance where he found his daughter swimming in the nude under a bridge and, like, had to take her out of the water and, like, put a jacket on her. Which
I felt like that
must have been an awkward scene in the film, because they're we didn't mention this, but they're real life father and daughter.
The guy that plays Alfred's son in the movie is his actual son.
Okay.
And the girl that plays his daughter is his daughter-in-law.
Well, it's still strange.
But it's still an awkward scene. Yeah.
Yeah. So he pulls his naked daughter out of the river. He's trying to implore that don't kill him. He's the one who brings law and order to this house of cray cray. And so they make him drink the poison scotch, and then he collapses.
I would just like to point out that they poisoned him with the pills that her mother takes every day.
They crumpled up a bunch of these pills in the booze.
Which is obvious that she, as it goes on in the movie progresses, that she obviously needs these pills. So
yeah. And so we also forgot to mention that as this movie's going, the mom is having these, like...
Psychedelic. Well, not really psychedelic. Well, yeah, I guess one scene was. But when she decides to kill him, she's literally sitting in her room of paintings. And all she hears are voices, just various voices saying her name. And somehow at the end of that, she's like, oh, dude, we totes gotta kill this guy.
So some strong indications that the mom is out of her mind. And so they take his dead body up to the bed, and they do something with a funnel to make it look like maybe he drank himself to death.
I think so, because she just poured like a whole bottle of scotch down his throat.
To make it look like he might have died in his sleep of alcohol poisoning. And then they're going to try to figure out what to do next, when to call the police, when it would be the appropriate time.
They're just sitting at home waiting, like, well, because he's supposed to be at this shooting thing with a bunch of other people. So they're like, well, when he doesn't show up, maybe they'll send someone there and they'll find him and then we'll get a call. So they're waiting by the phone. And when it doesn't happen, they're like, okay, well, how long should we wait before we call the police and be like, you know, my husband was supposed to be home at this time. He's not. He's here. He's this place. I don't know what to do.
So that's when some dude shows up.
No, you missed a part. The son calls them and is like, hey, I have something important that I need to talk to Dad about. Can you let me know when he comes in? So they don't. And when they don't hear from him, when the son doesn't hear from him and the dad doesn't go into the office, they're like, dude, you guys need to go up there, check it out, see what's going on. So they go up to the cabin and he's not in the bed. Dun, dun, dun.
Yep, the dead body is no longer dead, and it's a fact.
And the bed is made.
Well, yeah.
That was more unsettling to me than anything. I'm like, your wife and your daughter tried to kill you. They dumped you in your bed, trying to make it seem like you drank yourself to death. And when you wake up from that, your immediate instinct is to make the bed?
Well, when you're a proper Englishman and not a hoor.
This is why I'm not a proper Englishman.
Well, there you go. And so then his body is mobile, and he tries to escape. I assume he's alive. I didn't get an indication that he was a zombie. He's just like half groggy, half dead. Like, he kind of stumbles into a box.
A wood box, wasn't it? Like, where you would keep, like... Well, I know obviously it's a wooden box, but I mean like a wood box to where you keep like firewood and stuff.
Yep. So he ends up in the wood box in the back of a wagon trying to escape these horrible women that have drugged him. And... they find him, and
I think they're a product of his own making.
And then they take the box and they drive it.
Here's where I start to have issues with this movie. Your whole plan at the beginning was to kill him, have somebody find him
to make it look natural.
To make it look natural, and yet you have all of these opportunities to do that. When you go up to the cabin and he's not there, your first instinct would be call around to his friends. Okay, you do that. Nobody's seen him. Then you call the police because you're supposed to, as this guy's wife and daughter, well, you're supposed to naturally be worried about where he is. So they don't do that. Then some random guy that the dad knows comes in and is like, you know, I need to talk to you about something, about this and this and this. And as the guy's coming up on his stupid horse, they find him in the wooden box. So, again... To make it look like you didn't have anything to do with this, you let out a blood-curdling scream as if you just found him in this wooden box. Which actually really, if you really want to think about it, they really did, considering they dumped him in the bed. And then it's like, oh my god, what could have happened? We just came up here to check on him because nobody's heard from him, and then we find him in this box. Oh my god. No. Their plan is to totally brush it off and put him in the back of their effing car.
Well, listen, you don't want to get the police involved till you know he's dead for sure. What if he just wanders off and starts talking about everyone how you killed him? Because the police are looking for him.
Nah, dog.
No, you don't. No, you're wrong.
Okay, going with that logic then, you make sure that he's really dead. Maybe you poison him again, I don't know. And then you do the same thing over again. You come back, you pretend to find him, and then you go from there.
Okay, now I admit this next part. I don't agree they should have called the cops. That would have been ridiculous. But I do agree what they do next is rather rash, where they just take him out in the car and find the nearest cliff and push him in the box down the cliff.
Your whole thing was to make it look like a natural death, and you're literally having him in a wooden box pushing him off a cliff.
If the alcohol... is found. I mean, people get drunk.
How did it get in the box and go off the cliff? Well, the box... Even if you're drunk out of your mind, I would like to get you drunk and see if you're able to accomplish this feat.
Well, the box could have broken up into driftwood, and then they would just assume he fell off the cliff.
Driftwood doesn't look like pieces of remnants of a wooden box.
They'll just be like...
Have you ever seen driftwood? That's not what it looks like.
They'll just be like, well, here's this dead drunk guy, and here's some garbage that's near him. Who cares?
In this much of an upper-class neighborhood, where all these rich people go, you gotta believe that place is maintained enough to where they would know the difference!
Man, you're gonna blow up the eardrums of these people. You need to calm down. I gotta stop.
I feel very strongly about half-baked murder plans.
I gotta stop giving you. You gotta switch to the decaf before this podcast. So they go back home finally to relax. The deed has been done, but he busts the window, gets broken, and now they're freaking out because they've pushed him down a hill. They've poisoned him. This guy's
like freaking Rasputin or something, dude. Yeah, did they try to shoot him too?
They didn't try to shoot him. They just held the gun on him, but then they never actually shot him. So they're freaking out. He comes leering at them. And
that was a brilliantly shot scene, by the way.
It was well shot, and he just kind of like is over them.
That terrified me.
It did make you jump.
It did.
And then so we cut from that to yet another dinner, breakfast situation where they're all at breakfast, the father, the son, and the daughter, and it's not showing you the mother. And when they're having just a regular conversation, and he asks the mom something. And when they
get his shooting jacket cleaned.
Yeah, and they show her, and either she's had a frontal lobotomy or she just has been frightened.
To the point of just...
She was already cray, but now she's full-on cray-cray.
She's dripping nay-nay, son.
And so she's a shell of her former self.
Which was probably a shell of who she was before she married him.
Yeah, so a shell of a shell of a shell.
Shellception.
Shellception. And that's how the movie ends. The man has won. He's finally gotten control of his cray-cray family, and order has been restored to the house of
Alfred. I still think that daughter is going to straight murder him.
Yeah, the daughter.
She's going to end up like taking a knife to his throat, I feel like.
Just keep it simple, stupid.
Yeah, that's what they should have done in this first place.
Well, no one wants to go to British jail. You get buggered in British jail.
You get buggered in any jail.
British jail, especially.
Buggered just makes it sound a little bit more...
Everything British people do...
Classy than a sodomized.
Exactly. Everything British sounds a little bit more classy. Even their rape words sound more classy than... I mean, even though it's the same thing, I'd rather be buggered than sodomized.
Buggered does sound a little bit more fun.
It sounds like a lot of fun.
It really does.
Sounds like a ride. All right, it is. So that wraps up Crucible of Horror.
No, it's Crucible of Horrors.
That wraps up Crucible of Horrors, our first entry in the Summer of Horrors. So, what'd you think?
I dug it. I really liked the Batman connection to it. And I liked seeing this actor who I had in my mind as being a certain type of person. All I'd ever seen him in was, you know, the Batman movies. It's like, oh, it's Alfred. That's so cool. So I liked seeing him in a different capacity. I liked seeing him be a bad guy.
Yeah, no, it was cool. He very much hammed it up in this movie. Mm-hmm. Played it very well. It was a decent movie. Like
he was very believable. I believed it.
And it's a decent movie. I recommend it.
Considering the other ones that we watched, I would highly recommend this one.
Well, hopefully the good luck continues, and because our next movie is going to be $5 for an August Moon. It's going to be an anthology movie, so multiple stories in one film. Another 19. We're still in the 70s.
This one's 71, right?
I think it's 71 or 72. And that is, by the way, I forgot to give out our website. If you like this podcast, you can find us at thecriticsword.com. Also rate us on iTunes.
And subscribe.
And you can email me at mimekiller@gmail.com if you want to discuss these movies. Or if you want to critique the way I pronounce whore. Or horrors.
It's okay. Words are hard.
Words are difficult. I'm finding that out more and more as this podcast goes on. Next week, we'll be watching $5 for an August Moon. We'll be switching Mary to decaf.
No, next podcast, I'm just going to be straight on cocaine.
Oh, God. What's that going to look like?
It's going to be insane.
It's going to be... You're going to be cray-cray, just as cray-cray as the woman was in this movie?
I might even take a shotgun to you.
Oh my God. Well, look for that exciting podcast sometimes next week. We're trying to get this done at least once a week. This ends up being like once every 10 days. So we'll try to get on somewhat of a routine schedule, but...
Especially with this, as the summer isn't going to last forever.
Yeah, I don't want to be the fall of horror.
Oh, the fall of horror sounds pretty fun though. Oh
man, leave me alone. All right, that wraps it up for this podcast. Have a great day.
See ya.